There it is.
Oh, yeah. Silicon Valley Wi-Fi, man. That's what we do. What's up, Z-Pack? It's your boy, Z-Dog MD, Dr. Zubin Nemanja. You'll never believe where we are, except it's in the title of the thing. God, this is going so badly, Anne. I'm here with Anne Wojcicki, the CEO and co-founder of 23andMe, direct-to-consumer genetic testing, and a lot more. And we are going to get to the bottom of why doctors are like, and it's great to have you. Thanks for letting us come.
I haven't seen that reaction quite like that before.
That's because we pretend we're not having that reaction, but inside we're like, I don't know what to do. This frightens me, right?
Love it.
I know. So thanks for having this year at beautiful headquarters. And it's like down the street from where I trained at Stanford. I stayed in a condo down the street, and I used to ride up Central, Alma, go to Stanford, take my punishment, 36 hours, come back, cry myself to sleep, eat a burrito. That was breakfast.
Burrito.
And then I go back to work.
So. Wow. Well, welcome home.
And you're a child of Stanford, too.
I am.
From like...
I grew up here.
Yeah.
I grew up here, been here for a while. I love the Stanford community.
It is a beautiful thing. They have a lot of trees.
They do have a lot. There's a roaming tree.
The mascot. Okay, listen. I gotta tell y'all a little secret.
Yeah.
I was a Cal alumni.
Oh.
Damn.
So you
go Bears. Oh. I know. She's wearing red and everything. I mean, it's
supporting Stanford.
She's supporting the thing. So one of the things. So my crew has to understand. First of all, 23andMe is supporting this episode and a couple episodes with us. And the reason we agreed to work together is that we understand we're trying to build this thing called Health 3.0, which is a new repersonalized, unique self-medicine. To do that, we need to refocus on the relationship between the healthcare providers and professionals and our patients, but also the relationship between the technology and the patient empowerment and this whole triad. And what I found is that when you're talking about direct-to-consumer genetics, which you guys started doing back in 2007, it's almost like initially doctors and healthcare people feel like you're just trying to take us out of the equation. You're going right to the patient. You're having them spit in a cup. And they're learning all this stuff about their health and ancestry that they ought to be coming to us. And if they don't come to us, then we feel left out. And when we do see the results, we don't know what to do with it. And panic, hysteria, mayhem, anger. So how have you seen this evolve and change over the years? Because my thinking on it has changed, having gone through it. Actually, twice.
Okay.
I did your old test.
Oh, good.
And now I've just done your new test.
Oh, good.
And so I've been informed with a lot of interesting stuff. So you know, how has this come together?
So I think, you know, it's interesting. Like, I'm not obviously not a doctor, but I've obviously...
Lucky.
But I love medicine. I'm obviously a patient in all kinds of ways. And it's interesting because doctors often complain, like, oh, I tell the patient to do these things, and then they don't do it.
Yeah.
And they're not listening to me. And there's always been sort of this desire, like you want your, same way you want your children at some point to grow up and get out.
I want it now. And they're like,
it's not going to happen yet.
Yeah.
But you kind of want your patients to take care of themselves. Like, step up to the plate, people. Like, take charge. Like, you're responsible. Like, if you're grossly overweight or you're eating burgers every day, like, there's an issue. So, so for me, I've always felt like, I don't want to live in a communist society of just like, you know, people telling me what to do, which I think is kind of how our healthcare is. Like, people just tell you what to do, but you very rarely are the decision maker.
Yeah.
And so 23andMe really came about with this idea of like, how do I just empower you? Like, you as the individual, like here's like, I'm giving you the digital manifestation of you. And a lot of what the genetic risks are about is prevention. And so how is that can give you a risk factor about yourself or information about yourself that might not necessarily otherwise be easily accessible and help you make decisions that are going to yield to a better outcome? And my hope here is like part of what we're trying to pioneer is not a world that's totally separate from the doctors, but like a world where the consumers step up to the plate and start to take more responsibility. And to me, after 10 years of doing this, the beauty of what we have done is that I see people suddenly getting this sense of like, oh, like I could, like I learned a little bit of science. Like I'm learning about this. Like I can do it. And now like, what can I do next? Like, how do I actually start to change my behavior in some way? Like, what could I do? So we're generating an aha moment where I find people actually want to change their behaviors. And then they're a little bit stuck, like, well, but what do I do?
Right.
And that's actually where, like, I think the partnership with the physician world becomes really important. But a lot of, like, to your point, a lot of physicians are not quite trained on it yet. And frankly, a lot of physicians are not paid for work on prevention.
Now, you nailed it on every level in terms of why this is a problem for docs. Because you're absolutely right. It's an empowering experience to see that stuff. You want to learn. You want to get more literate in genetics. You want to understand the science of it. You also want to understand, well, what is a health risk trait? It's not diagnostic of disease.
Right.
Your genes aren't your destiny.
Right.
There's a thing called penetrance.
Right.
And all these other things. But then you have the doctors and the healthcare community, which is our audience. And they will say, well, look, we have 15 minutes to see this patient. Mm-hmm. We have to click these boxes to get paid. We don't get paid to have these conversations. And also, we're not entirely sure what to do with some of this data. And so what are we going to do? Now, the thing is, when I took the test, I found out I had hereditary thrombophilia. Yeah. Not just any old hereditary. Right. I had both factor V Leiden, heterozygous, and prothrombin 202-10A. And my tribe knows this, that I was like, I'm going to die. Mm-hmm. And that was my first thought, because I see blood clot in the hospital. I should know better, Ann.
Right.
I know that first of all, so what's the first thing I do? I call my dad. Mm-hmm. He's a doctor, also from India. Mm-hmm. So I tell him I did this thing, and he's like, wait a minute. You paid, okay, money to spit in a cup so they could tell you you're a mutant. I could have told you for free. And I think actually one of the things that he was pointing out was that, well, just it's a family history thing. So, but this is what happened. I said, so is there a family history that would back this up? And he said, no, of course not. This is probably an error. How can you possibly? And I said, well, what about grandpa? What did he die of? Blood clot. What about Uncle Rashid? What happened to him? He died in his sleep. His legs were swollen. They said it might have been a blood clot. And I'm like, wait a minute. So I never would have known this family history. I never would have asked this family history had I not been prompted by this test that I ordered myself, not as a doctor, but as a consumer. Now, when I went to talk to my doctor about it, he was like, blah, I don't know, maybe we'll talk to a hematologist. And so I called my buddy at Stanford, and he's like, don't panic, just be careful, be aware, etc. So I needed that connection.
Yeah.
So that's how it went down for me. Now, I think a lot of doctors are like, well, can't you get this from the family history? Mm-hmm. Is this giving incorrect information? I know the FDA had a big kerfluffle. Mm-hmm. And then, so those are the things that worried us as providers. Mm-hmm. How do you kind of parse that?
Mm-hmm. So I think, without a doubt, physicians have to start to be, educated more and more about what to do with this information. And I think that, again, I get back to the core element of the company is like, I'm not sure that all these questions can be reasonably answered by a physician in 15 minutes. Like, so in part, the question becomes like, is that actually the right channel?
Yeah.
One of the reasons why we actually have partnerships with all retail, like we sell in Walmart and Target and CVS, in part because like more and more people are looking for other ways to get information.
Right.
And is that if you're higher risk for a blood clot, what are you going to do?
Right.
Like potentially, like what if that was plugged in with the airline where like airlines are like, you really need to fly business.
Oh, heck yeah.
Like
and they pay for it?
Right. Someone's paying for it, but like you need to fly business. Or like it's compression stockings,
right,
which are really sexy.
Right.
But like the compression.
You want to see mine?
I'll match you with there. But that's a retail experience.
Right.
And so what is a way that we can actually start to think about you getting some of this information, but like the retail world is also helping? Or is it like you talked about the 3.0 world, like is there a digital world where you're not totally reliant on the physicians in a brick and mortar building, but can I call Doctors on Demand or Grand Rounds and start to get more opinions about like what are some of the things that you could start to do, or more questions, or like, or online, can you actually start to sort of crowdsource a lot of this information? So I think that there's a real issue in healthcare in that, one, I do get the 15 minutes. I go into Kaiser, I get my 15 minutes with my doctor. Like, you can't realistically give all that information.
Right.
And lifestyle is a bigger picture. It's like how you live your whole life can't be summarized into 15 minutes. So for us, what we're kind of trying to pioneer is there a 23andMe community where people are coming together and starting to learn more and more from each other because they want to change their behaviors? And then can we do partnerships with other groups that are almost outside of the system to help people figure out how to execute on that?
Yeah.
And those are people like Walmart gets paid when you buy something.
Right.
It's Doctors on Demand, like that could be a fee for service. Like you can get paid for that.
Right.
And then leave, like when I actually have something that's really critical, I'm going to brick and mortar because like that's actually the best use of the time and those resources. So part of what we're trying to figure out is like people I think are hungry for information about themselves. And I think family history is really valuable. It's just that a lot of people don't know their family history.
Right.
And this triggers a conversation. Like, I'm amazed even in my family. Like, I started this company. Like the conversations that come out where you're like, oh, like, we, my sister, like, one of my sisters was high risk for macular degeneration. And then I was like, oh, yeah, my grandmother. Like, I remember when she, like, couldn't really see. And, like, well, she had it. So, okay, clearly this makes sense. There is this family history here. And then what are the things that we can do?
Yeah.
And for us too is like we're only going to really ever have better healthcare. Like to me, one of the realities of healthcare, like you being the doctor, is that you know people come into you all the time, and you don't really know what to do. That is why it's an art.
Yeah.
Like, but what I'm trying to do is say, let's get the data so we can really emphasize like the art when it should be an art, but get data when we just can be able to say like, hey, here's exactly what you're supposed to be doing. And then start to generate. So for me, people want to start to participate in research. They want to crowdsource. How do we actually get all this information so I can help you be the best doctor that you want to be and help the individuals and actually take that responsibility?
And see, I think everything you said points to this idea that what we're trying to do is disrupt. And disrupt in a good way. And what that means is doctors and nurses and healthcare professional pharmacists are here and they're used to doing a little bit of everything for everyone. Now the question is, what if you get that data and precision medicine, really just unique data for individuals that empowers them, they learn about themselves. They start pushing the docs and stuff up higher so that they're practicing that high level intuitive art of medicine that only they can do. But then they're sitting with this data and they're saying, okay, now, okay, well, he has two hereditary, you know, risk factors for thrombophilia. What, how do we parse that? Because only a doctor is going to be able to really dig into that in conjunction with, I love that a bit about, maybe he needs to fly business class. That's what I put in my speaking contract. And people think I'm like, oh, he's a diva. He wants to fly first class. I'm like, no, I don't want to die in coach, literally, on a 12-hour flight to Dublin.
It makes sense.
And so at least that's one of the story, and I'm sticking to it. So thank you for that, Anne, because you've helped me fly with high class. But the idea that then the doctors need to be empowered to understand what to do with it instead of being threatened by it. Now, I think part of it is we need an entire revamp in how we pay medical people. So they should be paid for outcomes. In Health 3.0, the idea is that we're collaborative, we're team-based, we're supported by a team. We embrace technology that helps our patients be empowered. We hold our patients accountable, and they hold us accountable to be their shepherds. And that's this beautiful triad that I show in this slide, where it's a laptop, doctor, and a patient. They're this way instead of how it is now.
Wojcicki, what are your allergies? Okay. Yeah, I'm sorry. Okay, do you smoke? Okay, don't do that. Click. Okay, I got $5 and that's what it's like.
Right. And that's, we call that Health 2.0, the mechanized assembly line of medicine that we're in now. 1.0, by the way, was that old sacred like guy with a white coat, Marcus Welby, tell me.
Yes.
I've known you since you were a child. You're running this company. Are you stressed? Are things okay? How are the kids? And that kind of thing has died away now. So we want to bring some of that back with the technology, and I think this is a great way to do it. Now, one of the questions that always comes up, my fans, yesterday we did a show on this, and they were like, but the privacy. Are they taking my C, G, T, and A genetic code and selling it to the lowest bidder, the highest bidder, and is there privacy, and what's going to happen, and Big Brother, and chemtrails, and vaccines?
Yeah.
So how do you, what's the deal with that? Because this is a legitimate concern of my fans.
So we, so you're on Facebook, obviously.
Yes.
You put all kinds of content on Facebook. There's like a lot of very personal information about you on Facebook. And your genome is also really, it's very personal to you. But like I always say to people, like, I love your genome. It's beautiful. But your bank account is a lot more interesting to me.
Oh.
And so it's one of the things, like, in terms of a data privacy question, like, it's really interesting to you. And we as a company, we do everything we can to protect your privacy. But the reality we find is, like, it's most interesting to you.
Yeah.
The second thing is we consent our customers if they want to participate in research.
Right.
Over 85% of our customers are participating in research. And I think one of the main things that we have pioneered here is, like, when I was working on Wall Street and investing in healthcare companies, and I saw, like, the sense of being a human subject and the whole Henrietta Lacks, like, you want to, like, I kind of got the, like, the white coat looking down and been like, I want to take everything and run.
Right.
And this sense of, like, I'm a subject and then you're not even going to tell me what's coming. Like,
right.
No. We want to be a partner in research. So for me, the whole thing that we're giving, like to me, the definition of privacy is not a block of information flowing, but choice around how you want it to flow.
Right.
And so it's all about making sure you have the opportunity. You want to participate in research? Participate in research. You want to participate in a study about Parkinson's disease? Take the study. You don't want to? Don't take it.
Right.
We're completely about choice for you. You want to withdraw your consent? One of the things that we do that almost no one else does is we allow you to withdraw your consent.
Right.
And
right.
So most hospitals, like once someone signs up, then you're in.
You're done, yeah.
Yeah, you can't get out.
Yeah, yeah.
And so like I always mark up my, when I was in labor, I was like marking up my consent forms. Right, I'm right, like right. Absolutely no video.
No one gets my placenta but me.
I was more like videos and photos, like no. Right. I mean, but like for us, like we're all about the choice for people. And what we find is that people, the same way people want to participate in all these walks, people genuinely want to participate in research, and they understand the fact that like you as the physician, like you have a hard job and you don't have a lot of data. So the only way we're going to have cures is if we all come together. And so we're trying to create a platform to say, it's all about personal choice. You guys come together if you want to come together, and we're going to use all this data to try. And the main thing that we do, you might not want to participate in a study on it, but then we let you withdraw. But like people are realistic, like drugs don't come from nowhere.
Right.
They come because pharma or biotechs or academia spends a lot of money and a lot of time working on that. And so we're here to try to say all these people really care about disease and they want to move the ball forward, and we're going to help connect them to move the ball forward when they want to.
Got it. So all that research that you guys are doing, and I know because I answered about 1,000 questions on hereditary thrombophilia. Now, what's great is you can take that data and you can do associational stuff and go, oh, he has two different genetic traits and it's associated with this phenotype. And this is the exact outcome that he had. Mm-hmm. And they can start making data conclusions. You have like, what, 80 publications from 23andMe?
Yeah.
You have a lot. Mm-hmm. And you're also doing a therapeutics division where you're like, I wonder if we can actually make medications based on the data that we have. So it seems to me, ZPAC, if you're giving them your DNA and you're opting into research, you actually might be helping the development of drugs. But here's a question. Mm-hmm. Can an insurance company get DNA from you with my name on it? I think what people worry about.
Yeah, so and that goes to something like, so we get a lot of questions around privacy. Like, no, your data is protected for you. We will never give your information out without your explicit consent.
Right.
So like if you explicitly consent and say, I want to participate in this study and they want your DNA, then we would do it.
Right.
We will never give out your information without your explicit consent.
Got it.
So no, like there's no insurance information going anywhere.
Right, because I can imagine if there were pre-existing conditions, I'd be screwed. Because they'd be like, you're gonna die.
I think this is where there's a little Gattaca. There's a little sci-fi that's
Tom's
in
favorite
this.
Movie, by the way.
Gattaca is so good. You guys need to go watch Gattaca. It's like the best movie ever. Like that part where he's like, I'm gonna, when they're swimming, it's like a chicken race.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Tom has a film degree.
It's so good.
Oh, do you
sorry,
really?
I do.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I know almost, I was like, I've seen Gattaca, but I've seen almost no other movies. I think that there's a lot of sci-fi about what happens. The one thing I've learned with healthcare is that very few groups really know what to do with all the data.
Mm-hmm.
There's like it's a lot of health data is used to optimize workflow and like how to best move it around. But like very few things come down to you as the individual.
Yeah.
And so I there's a world where I should be able to start to predict. But to your point, like I can ask you, like, did you have a family member who, you know, died of a blood clot? Do you have a family member who's had Alzheimer's? And those are also great predictors. Like genetics that we point to as like potentially a better predictor, also because a lot of people, like you might not be related to one of your family members that you think you're related to. So genetics does become a very solid predictor of some of these conditions that can be passed down.
Right.
But I think that's where insurance, you know, they're going to look at all of it, but it's we're still in the early days of really being able to predict exactly what is going to happen to you.
That's the thing. So I think you guys, and it comes from a place of humility to say, we're still in the early stages of this.
Totally.
Where you, so this is what I love about you. The first time I saw you speak was at Eric Topol's Genetics Center, like 2013.
Yeah.
And I was going so after you. I had to follow you, which sucked. Uh-huh. Because you go up and you're like, this is what we're doing. We're disrupting this. We're blowing this up. We're going to do this. And we're going to just give you your data. And it's going to be boom.
Yeah.
And I remember just going, and then I went up and I immediately retailored my talk. Yeah. Around what you'd said. I was like, okay, and this is what happened with me in 23andMe, and this is how it went down. And then afterwards, we had a meeting.
We had a chat, yeah.
Yeah, and yeah. I think I have a picture of you rubbing my calf to prevent clot, which, by the way, I cherish. I cherish it. And so in
give me your calf now.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Well, now I'm better. I'm better now, uh-huh. and I'm less nervous about it. But the idea that you were the first mover on this, really, in the big way, and then, you know, Malcolm Gladwell has this whole thing, you got to be third. Because the first movers get a bunch of arrows in their back and they fail. And the second movers kind of screw it up. And the third movers actually then make the thing. You know, Apple with the mouse and all that. But the thing is, you guys were the first mover, the second mover, and the third mover all. Because after the FDA came back and said, you can't do these health risk assessments anymore, you guys said, okay, cool. Let's come back and we'll do it in a different way that's actually is a partnership. And the new version is I think vastly improved in terms of how physicians interact with it. So I want to compliment you on that because it's not easy to do that. A lot of companies either would have disappeared, they would have said, well, we're going to pivot to something else, but you stuck to your guns and said, no, this is a thing. Okay, fine. The FDA should be a part of this. Let's do this. Right. So how was that experience for you where FDA was like just like, la 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 la. I mean... Because, you know, I don't like authority. And when people tell me what to do, I'm like, I want to hoist a middle finger.
Yeah.
But I want to do it in a clever way. Like, hey, can you hear this? Let me just, let me turn it. And but you obviously can't do that because you're the CEO of this company, which, by the way, kudos to you in the Silicon Valley, which is a cutthroat world. You're, is anything like the show Silicon Valley?
I watched the first episode and then I was like, this is so similar. I can't watch it anymore.
I can't watch it. It's like a documentary. I know.
But I saw the five-fingered shoes. I was like, no.
Yeah, he's just like, that's right.
Okay. There's a level of detail that's too close.
That's exactly how I felt when I saw the first episode. So I'm sorry, I derailed the conversation. Yeah. FDA.
Yeah.
Yeah, that whole process.
So, you know, I think the advantage of being a mission-driven company is when you know your mission and you know what you really care about, like, there's bumps in the road, but like I'm still heading over there. It's just that like somebody shut down part of the road.
Right.
So it wasn't. It was a challenge to figure out what the path forward was going to be, but we knew always like we never lost sight of the direction that we were going. So one of the best pieces of advice that we got, like we were very committed to a few things. Like one, we're about genetics.
Yeah.
And we are about direct access. And that was something, the direct access was the part that we were really committed to fighting for.
Right.
And so, you know, one of the things, Silicon Valley is not great when necessarily knowing about
the DC weirdness
and regulation. And I had one advisor who came in, she sat down and she's like, listen, like if you want to sell this company in 3 years, like this is what you do. But if you really care about making long-term change in healthcare, you just sit down and you do the work.
Yeah.
And like they're going to create a ton of work for you to do, but you just do it.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things like it's my family, like we were raised in such a way like you're never afraid of hard work. Like it's taken a long time, but you just do it. And I think that we're pioneering a path for the consumer. Like to me, the most important thing that 23andMe is doing is saying we're giving the consumer a voice in healthcare for themselves. And it has to be a partnership. Like, we so want the physician community to embrace this. It's like, we want people to step up to the plate. Like, we really want people to say, like, they're capable. They're totally capable of learning this information. Let's give it to them in a way where they can step up to it. And so that's what we've been trying to pioneer with the FDA. And I'm really happy. Like, I think we have a good partnership now. We've been able to show that people can understand this information.
Right.
It's not going to work for everyone,
right?
But for a vast majority of this population, I can teach people that they can be a budding scientist,
right?
That they can take care of themselves,
right?
Like you send people home with babies every single day, you have no idea what to do with these things. You can step up to the plate. You can start to learn about yourself.
I tried to microwave the baby when I first got home because I'm like, it feels a little cool to me, and. So this is the thing, and I think I want to advocate to my tribe, like, my thinking on this has evolved because I used to be very nervous about it. I'm like, are we going to panic patients? Data says you don't.
No.
Are they going to talk to us about it? Data says they all want to. Mm-hmm. We don't have the time or they don't make the time in the visit. So we have to change, obviously, as Health 3.0 evolves and we get more time to spend with our patients and we're judged on outcomes, having that conversation is going to matter to the outcome for the patient because we're partners in that care. So it's about a collaborative partnership. And the fact that I think in the early...
I think in that regard, though, it has to be... It can't all be relying on you. You know, right. one of my favorite books is about connectivity, and it's about the power of your circle. Yeah, you know, it's like if you have one friend who is obese or smokes, you're significantly more likely to be obese or smoke.
We were talking about this just
this
the other
day.
This
is why I got fat, because Logan...
Well, shut up, sir.
This is why... You made me fat,
You
dude.
Made me a dick.
You suck.
It's all day, every day. All day, every day.
And,
you know, us Silicon Valley power brokers, it's hard to get good help. And Tom had
No, but you're absolutely right. We've talked about this, like who you surround yourself with.
But my point is with a doctor has to realize it's not all about you. I I'm unusual because I love, like, I still see my pediatrician. Like, I love my pediatrician.
Oh, that's adorable.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. It's very cute. He just retired, which is sad.
Oh, no.
But most people don't have a relationship with their doctor, right. And you have the 15 minutes. So you have to think about who else can you rely on this ecosystem?
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, is it the friends and family? Do you see friends and family all together?
Yeah.
People go, the average American goes to Walmart 3 times a week. It's why I think about Walmart all the time. Or Amazon. Like, where are people actually going?
Right.
But your healthcare, like one of the things we try to emphasize to people, your healthcare is accumulation of your actions every single day.
Right.
So when you're 65 years old, you're like, oh, I'm going to start drinking juice, like green juice. I'm going to be healthy tomorrow. Like, no, you just spent 65 years like sedentary and eating Big Macs. Like, that doesn't work. You gotta do it.
Because I was like hoping.
You're looking pretty good.
Well, no formal training. It's called starvation.
But, like, you gotta, like, and that's for me the hope here is like get people to recognize, like, every single day you're taking care of your body. You only get one. And, like, you have to. Although my kids debate that
with
me.
Yeah, now there's head transplants.
Well,
right.
You could start to transplant. I'm like, that's it. You got one body.
Right.
Like,
by the way, can I ask you, is it a head transplant or a body transplant? Where do you fall on that?
I like to keep everything intact. Like,
right.
I'm not into transplanting all kinds.
Because I feel like it's not a head transplant. You're transplanting a body onto another head.
Well, or like a robot.
Right. Well, that's much what I vote for. Right. Irona. That's what I.
I don't think that there's going to be any kind of head transplants in the near term.
Well, that's good to know.
Yeah.
So.
But you get one, and so, like, take care of it. And I think that's where the more the physician community can recognize, like, hey, you know, is there a partner that you could eventually have and say, like, oh, you know, you're going to go to Walmart, like, talk to the pharmacist about this. Or, like, hey, here's a section at some point. Like, there's going to be healthcare sections in these. Like, what are ways that you can empower people when they're not in the doctor's office, which is not very often.
Which is the majority of their time.
To, like, to get this information and make those changes.
It's been estimated that 10% of our health comes from our healthcare system at a cost of $3 trillion a year.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest is everything else. Your circles, your social determinants of health, your diet, people around you, your genetics, etc.
Mm-hmm.
Well, here's a question. So if you're going to empower other people to help, which I agree 100%,
mm-hmm.
here's the question. How do we educate clinicians about mm-hmm. this stuff? Because a lot of us are really in the dark. One thing I would say is we can do it ourselves.
Yeah.
Well, the minute I did it, I was like, I get it.
Yeah.
In fact, I'm fascinated by it.
Well, I mean, one thing we've talked about, I mean, there's all kinds of regulations around it. And,
right.
And so, like, I've always wanted to say, like, anyone who's a doctor will give you a kit.
Right.
Because, like, the best way to learn about it...
Is to do it.
Like, there's no better way to learn about genetics than through your own experience with it. So we have a program now internally. Like, we're an unusual company in the capacity that we want to reach out to all the physicians, but we're not selling anything.
Right.
Like, all I want to do is say, people are, like, a lot of healthcare in my mind changes when we're generating, information's being generated, but the cost of acquiring that information is free to you.
Right.
As a physician.
Right.
Like, people sound like, if you're going into surgeries, you don't, and people are showing up with their Factor V report, it's no longer a question of, like, oh, is it, you know, worth the cost of actually generating this information?
Right.
It's been generated.
They have it.
So what do you do with that information? Right. And so we need to support that ecosystem of, like, how do physicians, so we're spending a lot of time and resources now creating CME content, talking about, like, what are ways to make sure physicians can get this information from their patients, or that they're educated, you know, when the patients are coming in, and that they can
they can do something reasonable with it.
So this is really interesting, because one thing, Z-Pak, you'll see a coupon code in the description. Mm-hmm. It is a $99 voucher for the Health and Ancestry report. So if you're a healthcare provider and you're part of our pack, there's a limited number. We've already gone through, I think, like half of them, because mm-hmm. people were really a good response to it. And good. I'm looking at who they are, nurses, doctors, pharmacists, good. Everybody. Good. So there's one way to do it, and that's to try it. Mm-hmm. So it's really a good deal on it if you want to try this. And I would advocate it, because I did it, and it was amazing. Now, one thing you said that I thought I really honed in on was, look, do you screen for factor five? Do you spend $500 on the lab test to do it? Do you do all of this to see if you're at risk for clot before you go into the OR for your hip, so that you know that you don't have to be aggressive with the antiplatelet therapy, et cetera, the DVT prophylaxis? Or if you already have the data, if you ignore it and you don't use it and it's there, then I think it's on us. And I think that's what makes us a little nervous. So, oh my God, all this data's out here. Now what do I do with it? Am I liable for it? Well, not if it's a part of your protocol that you get this data from the patient, that you have it.
And that to me is the sign, like if I think out 5 years, like a sign of success for me is being able to help the workflow so that not all data is necessarily generated in the physician's office, but some data is coming from outside. So you might be walking in and saying, hey, I'm heterozygote for this mutation. Making sure that there's the right flow, process flow, so that you're going into surgery, you're having ACL surgery, the physician knows, okay, now this information came from you, not generated ourselves.
Right.
What do we actually start to do with it? So those workflows, like to me, that becomes really important for us to help understand, how is this information going to be used?
Have you guys talked to the big electronic medical record vendors and people like that about integrating your data into their charts?
I think it's, you know, in some ways EMRs are so decentralized.
Yeah.
It's spectacularly decentralized in the way like every hospital every department gets to decide for themselves.
We know it well, Z-Pak.
So we're always open to that. And I think, we think a lot about the whole medical records and information. Like, you probably have records if you were out here and then you're in Vegas. Like, you have records all over. I have records all over. So what are ways that we can also start to become that hub more and more, so then I can just give you that information at the right time? So we think about that. Part of the joy for me of having more physicians and nurses and, you know, pharmacists involved is getting that feedback. Like, we're the first to admit, like, we're crafting a whole new world here. Like, we don't necessarily know everything that we are going to, that's going to happen in 5 years. But the only way we can make it as great as possible is by getting the feedback.
Awesome. How about some comments from the quorum? So we got, let's see here.
Let me find a good one.
Yeah. It's funny that it's live.
Yeah. There's a couple hundred people giving us little hearts right now.
Amy Floyd says, I'm an RN and adopted. I have already gotten my 23 results. I had a 25% relative show up the other day, but they chickened out and quit sharing. As an adoptee, the genetic information is invaluable for me. It gives me a better idea of what I might have to deal with in my life.
Right.
Yeah.
Now,
you know, we get those stories all the time. I mean, I think that's where people... I mean, the one thing that I've been surprised at is like how much, you know, there's a lot of people who either don't know their ancestry from being adopted, or, you know, the reality is you have some form of non-paternity.
Yeah.
If you go back three generations, there's someone who's not related to you.
Yep.
So everyone, there's surprises all over the place.
My good friend from college found out, so his dad had passed away of pancreatic cancer. Mm-hmm. He did 23andMe to find out, well, do I have a risk of something? And this was in the early days. And he found out that half of his sort of lineage was African-American Puerto Rican. Mm-hmm. And his dad was white. His mom was white. Mm-hmm. So he then talks to his mom, who finds out, no, actually, you're right. That wasn't really your dad. It was this cruise ship fling that we had and this and that. And then he went on this mission and tried to find out. And he found out who his real dad was. And it changed his sense of identity. Mm-hmm. In the end, for the better. Because he was always like, I really like to dance. I love spicy food. Mm-hmm. I just don't fit in with my brothers. My brothers are nothing like me. Yeah. What's going on?
Yeah.
And so it really did change.
I think one of the things that's interesting, too, is like we started, like, I had the passion for health, but the fact that we've changed the definition of identity in so many ways, and in some ways, we get questions about this a lot now, about whether or not, you know, how do you define race and ethnicity? Like, that's really changing, and in some ways, it's an artificial construct of, like, oh, you grew up in these different areas, and therefore you are defined as Irish, and you're defined as African-American. Like, it's... For us, part of it is like starting to look at that genetic. Like, one, we're all related.
Yeah.
Like,
well, A, you see where it all comes from, Africa. Yeah.
We're all connected.
Yeah.
And so starting to see on that, you know, it's almost like, you know,
there's racial profiling that happens, but when you look at the molecular level, you start to see that we're actually all this just like incredible hybrid of each other. And so the importance of, on a medical side, like, one is a question of identity and just giving you a sense of your identity, but then second is also really helping the medical world realize, like, hey, like, I'm half Jewish.
Yeah.
So, but you wouldn't necessarily tell by just looking at me.
Right, right.
But like, I then, because I suddenly say I'm half Jewish, like, there's a whole new world of risk.
Right.
And so all kinds of people, like, I could look at you and I could say, like, well, I can't quite tell what your identity is.
Suckers. I'm whatever I need to be, people. Okay?
And so that's part of it is, like, I don't know, maybe you're part Jewish. Could
so
be.
I have 0.1% Jewish in me, mm-hmm. Ashkenazi, mm-hmm. and I'm 91% Middle Eastern.
Oh,
but my parents are both from India.
Yeah.
So they're of an old Persian lineage, and so it nailed it.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it nailed it. And in fact...
But that's what's... Like, Middle Eastern is so interesting because you had so many people who actually started to date. So, like, you could have easily been... had a big Jewish component.
Absolutely. And there's some Finnish in mm-hmm. me.
Oh, interesting.
And I always wondered because there was this Finnish delegation from HIMSS, the Health Information Manager, and they were really gravitated to me. And I'm like, what's going on, Gunther? I don't understand. It's the Finnish. I'm telling you. So, no, but it's really fascinating. That's why we did the new kit.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have our results yet.
Okay.
One of the shows we're going to do as a follow-up is we're going to open the results.
Oh, good.
We're going to have, hopefully we're going to have someone parse it with us, and it's going to be fascinating because to find out that Logan is actually 100% African-American, 100% is going to be transformative. Yes, it's transformative.
Yeah.
It means our jokes can change. It means there's all kinds of things we can do.
Yeah.
And so I'm looking forward to it.
No, that is the fun. I mean, it is one of the things that surprised me is how much that sense of identity, we really change people's identity. And it also, I mean, it goes to where we're regulated by the FDA for health, but, you know, I emphasize to people all the time, like, we change how people perceive themselves. Like, like there's a series, like, our product's not just like a widget and an app. Like, we mess with the most important thing about you, which is like who you are. And the stories that people write in, like, I it's just like data quality, and like it's one of the core values of the company is like remembering that there's like behind every drop of spit there's a person, and so we're about to tell them this like whole world about yourself, and like we have to recognize like how much we are, like that data is going to change you and set you on a whole new course in your life. And so there's a seriousness that happens in the company and a sense of responsibility because of just how much, like, we've seen these stories. We've seen millions of stories now from our customers. So we know the impact.
This is when I talk about Health 3.0 and repersonalized mm-hmm. medicine. It's stories like that of changing people's lives and having them understand their identity and some of their health risks, too. Even though these tests are not designed to tell you you're going to get a disease, they're not diagnostic.
Right.
They're there to give you guidelines, and you're supposed to have conversations with your doctor if you see something like I saw or something like that. So to me, this is the brave new world. I think you ignore it. If you ignore it, you're putting your head in the sand, because we should be empowering our patients. We should be giving them guidelines. Mm-hmm. We should be disrupting physicians so we push them up. Mm-hmm. So they do stuff that only they can do.
Yeah.
And be a part of this, which means probably try the kit if you can. It's a good Christmas thing too, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Find out, hey, Dad, you're not my dad. Merry Christmas. Maybe that's not the best marketing. That's why I don't work in marketing. But definitely, I mean, so in
that could be their commercial. You could do their commercials.
So what would you like, little boy, for Christmas? I want to find out my daddy's not my dad. Okay, you got it. We got a comment there?
No.
So in in 5 years or so, where do you see this thing? What's the future of 23andMe and the interface with Health 3.0 and caregivers like us that care about what you're doing and want you to succeed for the sake of all of us? Well, where are you going to be?
So I think, like, I look at when I go to the doctor and I get relatively generic, like, I'm 43 or 4, I can't remember.
We're the same age.
In that rate, what are you, 43
I'm
or 44?
I'm 44.
Okay, 44.
I love 44. How you don't, you're, there's
I'm like, I don't, well, I kind of feel like, you should, like, what's the purpose of...
Exactly, it doesn't matter anymore.
But you, you start to get in that age of all these guidelines, like, what preventative screening...
Colonoscopy.
Colonoscopy, mammograms, like, every, like, I don't know, didn't got no prostate. So
I had a transplant, a prostate transplant.
Oh.
So Tom was the donor. Oh. Because I wanted a younger prostate that was more robust.
Yes.
Unfortunately, I have graft versus host disease, and his prostate is attacking me, which yeah. it makes it very uncomfortable. After this, I'll run to the bathroom. Anyways, now that I've made it really awkward, go ahead.
So I think about, like, the personal, like, and again, the advice about for all everyone to be healthy is, you know, you eat better, exercise, lose weight.
Don't smoke.
So what's a way that I can actually start to get really personalized information and that I can make your job as my physician, like, really targeted? So I can look up my family history and say, okay, here's the things coming in my family history. Here's actually how I'm living my life. And to me, that's the beauty of all this data that's coming. You can see, like, how often am I exercising? How much am I sleeping? How am I eating? So collecting all that data with, you know, my genetic information plus the family history plus, like, you see me, and there's some, that's the art.
That's
you see
art.
Me.
Yeah.
And you say, like, well, do I look the same? Do I look worse?
Right.
With all that information, and I think then you can tell a complete story. And then your job is just that much easier.
Yeah.
And I think that's where the reality to me is, like, there's so much data that can make your job easier and actually, like, give a more personalized assessment for what you should be doing. So my hope is in 5 years is that there's two things. Like, one, genetic information really is integrated, and it's not about a lot of guidelines, I think, are predicated on what's the cost of acquiring information, like BRCA, Factor V, all these. Like, what is it that, like, this information is there, that there's guidelines about how to use this information? And I think second is that there's actually a really robust direct-to-consumer world where if it's at Walmart or Amazon or Target, that you can get information from your physician,
right.
But where you're living out your life, like how you're executing on what you, the decisions that you make every day, that there's support in the community. And that's, like, the most important. If you really want to drive changes, you have to have that kind of support in the community. And so that the physician becomes really important, but it's not all on you to drive patient behavior changes.
Right.
And so I think that's where, to me, it's really that twofold. Like, one is just, like, broad education and adoption and guidelines and, like, knowing how to use this information. Like, that's critical, and that's what I'm really focused on. But second is helping to pioneer a whole world where me as the consumer, if I'm higher risk for breast cancer, I stop drinking alcohol, I can exercise more. What else could I do or should I do? And if I'm, you know, retail is the reality of where you go on a regular experience and your family environment. So, like, how do I actually influence those two levers?
I love it. And, you know, I think part and parcel of all this is you're integrating the art, the science, and the business of medicine in a way that it's in balance.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea that you're out in the retail world and you're where the patients are.
Right.
One of the things we fail at in medicine all the time is we don't go where our patients are. We make them come to a crappy office and sit there and wait and do all this stuff. And if we can start to modify that. Now, look, it's hard for us. Mm-hmm. And you got to understand, we're conditioned by thousands of hours of training.
Right.
And we have these unconscious elephants that we're sitting on that we're trying to steer, and they're conditioned. So
that's why I said it's hard. And I'm like I said, I always wanted to be a doctor. I'm empathetic to that physician plight. And you know, I'm at Kaiser for, you know, a reason, in part because, like, they, like, I've always felt like I've gotten great.
Right. We had their CEO on our show. Yeah.
He did?
Yeah, yeah. Robbie Pearl. Yeah.
He did.
He was great.
He was my doctor, actually.
Robbie was your doctor. That's
amazing. We're like, see, this is the type of thing. Robbie could never tell you that, but I can tell you the anti-HIPAA stuff. I slammed the only day I ever cut school. I ran in to go get a beach towel, and I slammed my face into the wall, and I broke my nose. And so Robbie...
It looks great.
Look good?
I want her nose.
Robbie,
look at this
nose. So I called him like 20 years later, and I was like, hey, do you remember me?
Dude,
I'm the patient. I was like, but now I have a company I'd love to talk about. Like, so to me, that's part of, like, Kaiser's a company that, again, I know them well, but, like, thinking about how do you actually start to integrate this information? And because there was, like, a lot of what I learned about prevention, like, my pediatrician really taught me well, like, Anne, you're only going to come here once a year.
Yeah.
Like, you have the responsibility of taking
that's
care of
smart.
Yourself all the time.
That's
so I'm really grateful to him about, like, in creating that ecosystem for me.
That's amazing. I love it. And, you know, Robbie and I talked about how do we build this Health 3.0 and everything he's learned about what crappy care we get in the U.S., but we think we're getting the best care in the world.
Right.
Because the bells and whistles and the widgets and all that. But in reality, it's uncoordinated.
Right.
It isn't integrated.
Right.
It isn't necessarily physician-led. And in many ways, you need those components along with technology.
Well, I think part of the challenge, too, is that you don't... you know, because your care is in all kinds of different sites. Like when I lived in New York for 10 years, I have no idea where those medical records are.
Right.
So
Donald Trump has them.
And they're beautiful.
That's
I'm sure he's enjoying every minute.
These are golden. These are made of gold. Right.
But I think more and more, I'm a believer that if you really want to change healthcare, I got to empower you.
Yeah.
And I think that's where, like, there's a history in healthcare. Like, one of the things I find fascinating is researching how much, you know, when over-the-counter pregnancy tests came out, there was a total backlash. Like, people did not want...
Oh, my God, people are going to commit suicide.
Right, and even one of my favorite papers, I think it's JAMA, it was JAMA paper in 1961, where they surveyed physicians, asking them what percentage of physicians would tell their patients if they had cancer. And 90% of physicians said uniformly, we would not tell our patients. And I think that that's where healthcare is just changing. And people are very open talking about, you know, diseases and conditions. Like, one thing I really, like, react to in the company is when people say, like, oh, well, we have a healthy cohort. I'm like, there's no such thing as a definition of healthy.
Right.
Like, I look healthy. I have, you know, I have Hashimoto's. I have other things. Like, but there's all kinds of things. So there's no such thing really as anyone who is, like, in perfect health. So we are all on a spectrum of different conditions. And so for us, like, part of, like, redefining that whole picture.
I love it. You know, I have some lavender oil and crystals that will heal your Hashimoto's and some Armour thyroid as well. And also, don't get vaccinated because it will cause you to be artistic.
We do talk a lot about goop here.
Oh, yeah.
And so I think it's – so I bring it up to my team. I said, like, there's – I'm such a believer in data and in science and, like, in the physician. And, like, it just, like of real information. And we have a crisis in that. You know,
suck it, Paltrow.
No, I look at my chief science officer and I'm like, Gwyneth Paltrow is a – better scientific commentator than you. Like, people would rather believe her than you. Like, despite the fact that you were at Genentech for 15 years and all these things, like people want, like, there's something that she's doing that's like so appealing. So part of what I said, like, when 23andMe first launched, we did a spit party in New York and it was the front page of the style section. And scientists were like, oh, how could you be in the style section?
Dude, that's dope.
I said, part of the whole purpose, like, 23andMe has this push of, like, anyone can be a scientist, people.
Yeah.
Like, make it fun. So we mix a little bit of cilantro genetic testing with, like, factor five. But, like, it gets people excited. And so if we want to change behavior and we want to engage people, you got to learn something from the goop world. Goop has made it really fun.
You know what's fun? Mm-hmm. Jade vagina eggs. I'm not gonna lie.
So that was what, like, that was Richard was like, what is a jade egg? I was like, apparently you're supposed to stick them up there.
It's got magical, mystical energies. Something about a yoni. I don't even know. That is, by the way, my favorite, this is why I love Anne. First of all, among many reasons, as you can tell, she's amazing. Here's the most amazing thing. She said, you know, my favorite paper was a 1961 JAMA article. And I'm like, oh my gosh, she has a favorite paper. And it's 1961.
Well, it's just so interesting. Like, to me,
I agree.
Like, measuring.
You're preaching to the choir.
But, like, it's such a reflection of society.
Yeah.
Like, where were we at that time? And I think how people take care of themselves in the history. Like, I love the history of medicine.
It's amazing, right? We're going to do more shows on the history of medicine.
Actually. Oh, I think it's so
interesting. Will you be a guest if you're in Vegas?
Oh,
will you come to our studio?
Oh, of course.
Because we actually have something other than Logan holding an iPhone.
I thought this was, like, the whole show.
Oh, yeah. Well, it should be because it's actually more immediate.
This is real budget.
Yeah, that's right. This is where our shill pharma money goes that we don't take because we only partner with people that we care about goes. And, like, I mean, I want to respect your time because we're 11 or 12:30.
And the conversation was just like, boom, 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 boom.
Yeah.
Would you come back and be and
do it? I'd love to come to Vegas.
Dude, next time you're in Vegas, yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Come. We actually, my sisters and I, we go, we love Lake Las Vegas.
Oh yeah, it's awesome. Nice.
It's so fun.
Now, Susan is ahead of...
Susan runs YouTube.
And she's your sister.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and my other sister.
Okay, oh, please put in a word for me. Because we need help on YouTube. Because
we will definitely... Well, she also loves science.
Oh, science is good.
We talk about, the other sister's at UCSF, so she's in the sciences. Yeah, she's a researcher. So she studies obesity. So we went around Vegas specifically. We went to the dam specifically. The idea is like we wanted to go and study what people were eating there. So we just sit there and we're watching. We're like,
oh my gosh. Was it really, like chilled monkey brains?
It was just a lot of donuts and fried food.
Funnel cakes.
Eating habits. I mean, that's one of the biggest questions in this country.
ZPAC. Don't you think 23andMe should sponsor a video with us together? Me and Anne, we go in Vegas and we call it the Hang Under. And we hang out under an overpass and we just see what people are eating and we make comments.
Mm.
Yeah.
No, we would love to. my sister, she's the epidemiologist, she studies obesity and nutrition. And so we would go around places and we just study what people buy.
Your family are so high powered.
Totally.
What a bunch of gunners. No. I love it. Well, so what's my favorite paper? That's like the Thanksgiving. Well, my favorite paper is this. I mean, whereas my family's like...
Well, my favorite paper of all time, I should say, is our own, one of our first papers, the efficient replication of over 190 genome-wide association studies. That is truly my favorite paper because it was people like Shirley, who's walking right there. It just showed the power of tons and tons of data that in one fell swoop, we could do tons of genetic studies that were otherwise done as sort of these single... projects. And for me, part of one of the ways that you're really going to move the world forward is by having a more efficient research pool. So if you have all this data together, I don't then you at Stanford and you at Harvard and you at University of Michigan have to go and create your own little cohort to study. If there's just one giant pool of individuals who are all consented for research, well then you can do multiple studies on all of them. So our paper was, replicating 190 genetic studies that had been previously done in one fell swoop.
In one study.
Yeah. So we always thought it was the multi-million dollar, tens of millions of dollars had been spent on previous studies. And in one, just data analysis swoop, we could do all that research.
That disrupting research is a key component, I think. Mm-hmm. Making it easier, cheaper, more efficient, more accurate.
Right.
And making medicine actually be personalized. Because right now, I feel like I'm shooting you with a shotgun when I give you lisinopril for your blood pressure. I could either kill your kidneys, I could give you another kind of toxicity, or I could save your life. I don't know what it's going to be. Mm-hmm. The more we understand about the interaction between our genome and our phenome and our exome and all the other omes, including garden gnomes, the better we're going to be off. And so I'm a big fan of what you're doing. Yeah, I'm actually in awe of you, Anne Wojcicki.
Oh,
you know why? Because your name is harder to spell than my last name, and that makes me feel
I want to be Dr. W.
Oh, yeah,
that. Dr. W.
What up, son? It's Dr. W and Z-Dog MD. We're keeping it real in 23andMe. What up? By the way, I was supposed to give a talk to your employees at 2 or 1.
At 1.
And... I have this gag that I do with Winnie the Pooh, where he orders a bunch of unnecessary tests and stuff. So I was going to have him do 74 and Eeyore, because it turns out bears have 74 chromosomes.
Yeah.
And so he's going to do that, which is a big stack.
Well, we have the URL 39 and canine, because dogs have 39 pairs.
You have the URL.
We have thought. We're way ahead of you.
You guys are like smart.
Yeah, right? Because once you realize the name worked for all kinds of you're like right. We're working with you.
You're like sisters from other misters and stuff, man. I love it, guys. Anne Wojcicki, CEO of 23andMe, the coupon code is in the link. You can get $99 health and ancestry test. If you're a healthcare provider, why aren't you doing it and just learn about it?
Also, and we'd love feedback.
And they want feedback.
We want feedback.
So you can go to 23andme.com/medical, and you can message them there. And Esther's on that team, and she's fantastic. She's a pharmacist. She knows her stuff. She wants to hear from you guys. They want to connect. They want to be in partnership with us, and that's why they're doing this with us. So we love y'all. We love Anne.
Aww.
Anne thinks I'm creepy, but that's what I do.
You're hysterical.
And then we've got Tom Heineberg.
By the way, there's only a couple hundred coupon codes left, so you guys should go grab them since you were the people who hung out live. All right? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Do it.
Do it. Do it. Any parting words of wisdom?
No, it was awesome. No, we're excited, actually. Like I said, after the 11 years experience, like the success of really changing healthcare will be about pioneering the partnership between the consumer in our world, or the patient for you, and the physicians, or the entire medical world. And so for us, like, I hope to come back in 5 years and actually really talk about how, like, this show launched us into the defining the successful moment of how we can actually really successfully partner between these two worlds that are coming together.
I plan to be a cyborg in 5 years, so I won't be returning your calls.
Better body.
mostly midriff. I just... Because I figure the fastest way to get ripped is to robotify my ab. And I say ab because I have one ab, and it's continuous. Anne Wojcicki, what a pleasure.
So nice.
Thanks
Thank
to you,
you
and 23andMe. Z-Pack, thanks for joining us in the middle of the day. Hit share, hit like, spread the word, and we out. Peace.